This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, this is Priya Liu. You're listening to Raise Your Game. Hetal Doshi from Osai is back for the Butterfly Effect series. Our topic today, integrating mental health as a strategy in the workplace. Very interesting topic. And why have we decided to have this as a topic this month?
Well, thanks for having me again, Frida. I thought it would be really important to discuss this because I think organizations have been hit by the dopamine bias of mental health. There's just this novelty cult, right? You have a new tagline or you have a new thing that comes out in the market and suddenly everybody's talking about it. And so most of the organizations or clients that I'm working with are all very puzzled as to how best to integrate mental health as a strategy in the workplace. And unfortunately, what I'm seeing is you know, something called the cultural confetti. So now they're trying to do more and more with the culture. And it sounds like a huge, big party, but, you know, the what of this is I think we're losing focus with regards to what is essentially required in the workplace. We also don't have a distilled intent, so why are we actually using mental health, should we, an intentional way of an organization to be performing? And also, unfortunately, what I've been seeing with some organizations is that there's been a reverse impact of their initiatives on mental health. So the more they promote it, unfortunately, the worse the impact that I'm seeing in the organization through the data.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Do I want to address this now or address this later? Because I think first of all, it's like it's the latest buzzword, right? I mean, and some people will just say, yes, it's about mental health, but they're not really practicing what they're preaching. One.
Yeah.
Right. And then you were saying the reverse effect. What's happening?
Right. So, you know, when you think about what mental health really is about, there is a huge confusion between mental illness, mental health, mental maintenance. What is it really about?
Okay.
You know, so say, for example, if you're talking about physical health, would you be talking about chronic health or would you be talking about fitness? What are you actually talking about? Unfortunately, there's already a stigma associated with it. And so even the World Health Organization has made something what I call the WHO error, which is even the experts make this error, where, you know, WHO actually defines mental health as a state of well-being in which every individual realizes his or her potential. And on top of that, can make a contribution to his or her community. But in that same page where they describe and define mental health as well-being, in the same page itself, every other thing that mental health is associated with is with regards to disorders, substance abuse, seeing a psychiatrist, chronic health conditions, treatments. So which is what and what is which?
Okay.
And so I think the beginning of wisdom really for all of us in Malaysia, not only from an organizational perspective, but from a governmental perspective, from, you know, the NGO's perspective, from individuals' perspective, the beginning of wisdom is to really call things by its right name.
Okay. So, and you would call it mental health. So, I mean, what would you, so when you say someone's got disorder, substance abuse, that will be mental illness. I mean, that would be how you would classify it?
Yeah, typically when it comes to any kind of illness, that would require clinical treatment, right?
Right.
And how many percent of the population typically require clinical treatment would be like a normal curve. So that would be about 15 to 20, maximum 15% who would require that. But are we really talking about those people or target group in organizations?
Right.
I doubt it. Yes, we can definitely and should definitely address that. But in an organization, typically we have functioning or highly functioning individuals who get by, probably can do better, and maybe those of them who are really doing well as well. So I wouldn't call it mental health, preferably, because there is a total confusion as to what it means, and the damage is already done.
Okay.
I would just call it as what it is. If you want wellness as an outcome, then call it wellness.
Right.
If you want psychological freedom as an outcome, call it as that. So I think call it by its name, and organizations should be free to make a decision, a conscious, well-distilled intent as to what outcome you want. If that's the outcome you want, then call it by its name.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, very interesting. So, you say, okay, all these different variations. I always like to say, am I mentally fit? Right.
Yeah.
And so that's what, you know, I would rather be, okay, there is a mental maintenance, but then my goal is to be mentally fit. Right. And that means that I can think clearly about decisions. And even by, if something upsets me, I'm able to, you know, dissect why I'm upset and then understand that that's a human emotion, but to be able to process it. And just because something is upset doesn't mean I'm going to go into depression.
Yeah.
Right. So I am mentally fit to know that, you know, this upsets me. You know, I've got to process this, but I won't go down that path. You know, so that to me is what I would define as mental fitness for me. Now,
yeah, that's perfect, Frida. That's exactly the way to go. You know, I think I'm most famously or infamously known as the one who loves the Spice Girl song of Tell Me What You Want, What You Really, Really Want.
Right.
And so mental health is the same thing. Let's talk about what we really want and call it by that name.
Okay. So you were saying that the outcome that we really want from mental health, is it psychological freedom? What are the various things that we want out of it? You mentioned it briefly.
Yeah, typically it would be, you know, when you ask someone, you know, like, so say, for example, Frida, when you talk about mental health, what comes to your mind? What is it that you really want at the end of the day? Most people say, I want peace, I want happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And same thing with finance, right? So if you ask people, what do you want? They'll say financial freedom.
Mm.
And I think what people really want, but they haven't yet learned how to articulate it, is something called psychological freedom.
Right.
Meaning I am free in my mind to be able to think about things clearly and in the highest level of potential that I know I'm born with. So I would again say that this is a process that an organization needs to sit down and really make a decision about what name resonates with them as a company, as a brand, and then build a narrative around that. It doesn't matter what I like or what I, you know, have an affinity with. And from what I picked up from you earlier, actually what you are saying is mental clarity. That's what you like. That's
right.
An outcome that you like.
Okay.
So it could be clarity, it could be freedom, it could be it could be anything, but that's a decision that the collective needs to make.
Right. Okay. It gets further refined that way. Right. Okay.
It does, yes.
Okay. Now, what must be the five fundamental assumptions about human beings and work?
Yeah. So I think the assumptions are, you know, that we are not able to separate the noise from the truth and the truth from the noise, both about work and people. What I mean by this is that when it comes to what work really is about, I'm not sure whether we know, the extent to which it's job to make sure that people are mentally fit anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? Like, you know, we come from certain families and stuff. Do we impose on our families that, you know, it is your job as a family to make sure I'm mentally fit? So there's a lot of noise about what organizations should be doing. But what is the truth of really what an organization should be doing? I think we really need to distill that. So the assumption is that organizations need to be the end all and be all right now, but it's just not the truth. The same thing with people as well. I think, you know, we have a lot of masks. So there's a lot of disturbances with regards to how we show up at work, but we don't know the truth. So I think the first assumption that we need to really look at is, are we looking at the noise in work and with people, or are we looking at the truth? That's going to take a bit of time for us to determine, but we need to highlight that.
Right.
Does that make sense?
Okay, right. Okay, yeah. So all these factors. Now, with organizations, right, what should they be most, I guess, wary or afraid of when implementing mental health interventions in the organization?
The first thing that they should be really afraid of is who and how it's being implemented.
Okay.
You know, these days when we look at who is implementing it, and, you know, the reality is when we accept diminished substitutes as to who should be doing it, we become diminished substitutes. So these days we're seeing the likes of, I really hope that this is taken in the bestest of spirits.
Right.
We have NGOs which are very well intent, you know, they have the right intentions. I don't think that their context is in the space of an organization though. And so therefore I think there should be a very clear demarcation between where NGOs are placed. Is it more in the public forum or is it an organization? You also have overnight wellness and mental health consultants, people who are now suddenly mental health experts, wellness experts. We also have clinical psychologists who are fantastic. Mm. Their target groups are also different. Their target groups are typically people who might need more clinical intervention.
Mm.
You also have a lot of opinion-based approaches, meaning, you know, you've heard of the hippo effect, or the hypo effect. Mm. It's the highest, the highest invested person's opinion.
Yes, the one yes.
The most, right?
Yes.
In the organization, their opinions are the most valuable. Mm. Or celebrities.
Right.
Or certain campaigns by, you know, World Health Organization, for example,
mm.
or non-expert internal committees that are formulated internally within an organization. I think when this happens, I become very, very scared. And we've seen that many a times when this happens, we typically after that find out that there's a lot of reverse or negative impact from that,
okay.
Because of lack of clarity. So I think the most important thing is to make sure that you have a proper expert, a mental health in a workplace setting kind of an expert, and everything should be evidence-based.
Mm.
Also, I think signals are everything, meaning let's really pay attention to the reactions that are coming off from the ground when you implement certain things, and not just have a, like what we say, a shock and theory approach, meaning I'm an expert, I know something, I don't have to worry about reactions or repercussions.
Okay, the other point you talk about, you know, non-expert internal committees or other areas, right? The reverse effect. Can you give a scenario? I'm trying to picture this and I'm not too sure, but give me an example of something that's happened.
Okay, so say, for example, recently, you know, one of our clients invited a whole bunch of celebrities and, just celebrities to come in and speak about mental health.
Mm.
And, you know, the celebrities were talking about a lot of personal-related issues.
Mm.
And that could be a good thing. But what we realized was for the rest of the half of the day at work, this was a lunch talk,
mm.
the rest of the half of the day at work, guess what the entire conversation was going on in the entire organization?
Right. Depression, yeah, I guess.
So obviously, mm. if somebody's talking about issues, relationships that they've had, and they talk about it
right.
in the workplace, and they're celebrities, they've been endorsed, they've been brought in by the organization. The rest of the day, every single person was talking about their own personal relationship and forget about what was going right. They were all talking about what was going wrong.
Mm.
So I think, you know, there has to be a lot of clarity about, yeah, okay, it's good for people to open up. But when you open up, do you know how to contain it and how do you
right.
use it as an opportunity to build up the organization?
I see.
Ultimately, the interventions or whatever it is that you're doing, that you're investing in, should benefit the organization because the organization is paying for it.
Mm.
That makes sense.
Okay, so it's not, it's like, okay, fine, this has happened, da-da-da, and then I guess, and the call to action, right, towards something positive
yeah.
must be there because everybody loves the sob story. But if the sob story ends and then, you know, everybody dies and that was it, that's not a very uplifting moment, right? So,
Because,
I mean, the simple things, right? Whether you agree or disagree, many years ago, this was Jenny McCarthy talking about anti-vaccines, right? And everybody went on that direction. And, you know, different views come about, you know, and she's not a doctor at the end of the day, right? We'll discuss that after this. I'm here with Hetal Doshi from OSIC. This is our Butterfly Effect series. Stay tuned to Raise a Game, BFM 89.9.
Banana from Malaysia. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
You're listening to Raise a Game. Good morning, Frida Liu here. Hetal Doshi from OSIC is back with our Butterfly Effect series, and we're talking about integrating mental health as a strategy in the workplace. So earlier on, we were talking about how, you know, it's a popular buzzword right now, but we also got to be very clear in what the goal is at the end of the day, and it's got to be further refined. And, you know, this is a whole new understanding for me as well. Okay, now, who must take ownership of this in the workplace?
So I think, you know, with organizations, like I said, the assumption that we need to really clarify that this is the job of an organization, it's not.
Mm-hmm.
This is the job of anyone and everyone. When we were born, we never said that, oh, you know, an organization needs to look after my mental health and my mental well-being. That's absolute rubbish.
Mm-hmm.
The ownership of this in the workplace belongs to every single effect. Anyone who is hurt, anyone who is suffering, anyone who wants to be better needs to follow the herd effect, meaning I want to be able to be responsible enough to tear down whatever is not working well in order to build a muscle and get better.
Right.
And there needs to be radical transparency at all levels, and impeccable truth as well, to make sure that we shine the bright spots and the blind spots of organizations, leaders, teams, and individuals. Everyone needs to take responsibility for that.
Mm-hmm.
If it's okay, I'd like to expand a little bit about organizations, leaders, teams, and individuals and what their responsibilities are.
Sure.
Okay.
Yes, please.
Yeah. So organizations, right, when we stop listening to the whispers, they become a scream. And this is exactly what I'm realizing in organizations these days, where a lot of people in organizations, they get sick and tired of having to say that there's an issue here, there's an issue there, that they're actually turning into whistleblowing channels or social media as a way of screaming out these issues. There's a very famous Google walkout of about 20,000 people in protest of an unfair treatment of women in one particular day a long time back. And this was done to send a clear scream to the organization that we no longer tolerate these kind of things. And unfortunately, Frida, I think the reality is that organizations are being whispered to all the time. They have all the surveys in the world. They listen to all the water cooler conversations. But we're still just looking at data, listening to stories, but not really doing a significant amount of it and checking whether it's been any value add to the organization. There are many research articles about level of disengagement in organizations and people having checked out of the organization emotionally.
Right.
And research shows maybe about 70% have found to be checked out in an organization on any given day. Not all the time, but any given day.
Right. Right. Okay. Now, so when should mental health be introduced at work then?
Now.
Okay. No time like the present.
Yeah. It's really a concept that has been introduced in the 1950s and before that even. And I think we've just hit a cusp where it's become popularized. But yeah, I think we should have done this a very long time ago.
Okay. You know, just back to your earlier point again, right? You know, taking ownership of this workplace, right? So leaders, teams, individuals, what should they do?
So with leaders, I really can't wait to say this. I think this is probably the thing that I wanted to say the most is that leaders always say that they want people who are hungry, right?
Mm-hmm.
They always say, yeah, I want to hire a person who is hungry. But because of the way that they are, they actually leave people becoming suffering from indigestion rather than hunger.
Right.
There's just so much that we, throw back on individuals. We don't sift out what is important, what is not important. We don't treat them the way that is right. So from hunger, you get hungry people. And then when they leave, they, just suffer from indigestion. There's a study that meta-analysis of 62 different studies that showed that leaders who actually understand how to transform, or rather transformational leaders, are the ones who do the best. When you have someone who's hungry, you keep transforming them into that potential that they have rather than turning them into something else altogether.
Right.
So, with regards to leaders, what you do and what you don't do as a leader definitely becomes the culture of the organization.
Right. What about teams?
So with teams, what I really like is a study by Chris Chavers. He talks about how individual IQs are obviously very important. Mm-hmm. But ultimately, when you're talking about a team potential, it is all the social abilities, not the intelligence, the IQ, but it's the social abilities of the teams that actually raises the collective intelligence of the team.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's really not about how smart you are, but how well you're able to work with each other that can really raise your level of abilities compared to any other team. And Lori Gottlieb, who is a wonderful psychologist, she asked a profound question. A lot of organizations, they do individual interventions like, okay, let's support the individuals to become more resilient. But the truth is that, when Lori Gottlieb asked this question, how do we actually change as human beings? We never change alone. We always change in relation to other people.
Right.
People are the function of themselves and the environment. And so I think if organizations really want to pay, if they don't have money and they want to place their bet, they definitely need to start placing their bets on team intervention more than anything else.
Right.
And lastly, with individuals, I think we need to get rid of the impossible to please syndrome in individuals.
Right.
I think there is that phenomenon now that, we want to be pleased by our organizations and our leaders and stuff like that. We need to get rid of that. And I think as human beings, we need to really be, learning this idea of the finite game and curbing our need for instant gratification, understanding how we are actually going to play this game for the long haul as human beings across any experience that we're going to go through in our life till the day that we die.
Right. So how are you approaching this with your clients now?
So the first thing that we aim to do is to set up a committee of different types of experts. And from there, we really decide on, distill on the intent, the name of it, the tagline of it, and the narrative. And instead of creating like an intervention, we're creating like a very natural, organic movement in an organization where the committee, it's not committee-led, it is community-led. It is absolutely not committee-led at all. We get everyone in the organization becoming part and parcel of being engaged in it. We also have a special people analytics and research task force. So people who look at data, but also stories, because data without the stories, real life stories are useless, and stories without data are just equally useless as well. And so we look at the work by, done by Amy Edmondson and the likes of a lot of other very renowned researchers in the space of psychological safety, because what we realize is that when we look at everything and distill it, at the bottom of it, or the core of it, is psychological safety, the ability to talk about things, the ability to challenge the status quo, and the ability to take risks, which is in alignment with what organizations want, which is agility, empowerment, and definitely moving towards digital transformation. We also do a lot of experiments to see what works and what doesn't work. We also use evidence-based approaches, talking about studies, talking about terminologies, talking about phenomena, to educate people so that they have a language for something that they don't really have a language for right now.
Right.
And I like to say that one of the things that we do the best is something called Mute the Devil. It sounds horrible, but we really look out. You know, what we realized in the research of mental health or well-being is that it's actually not too hard for human beings to thrive, because that's what they want anyway. But there is the devil, you know, the right shoulder and the left shoulder. The devil needs to be muted.
Right.
And so although we can have empathy for a lot of things, it doesn't mean that we endorse behaviors that are completely backfiring the intent of the culture of the organization. And so, you know, older concepts like, we reward people who are high performers no longer exist. We have to mute the devil, meaning that some of the top performers are the ones causing all the unhygiene factors in the organization as well. And so with one of our clients, we've actually started to take the risk of putting high performers under performance improvement plan, because they could be performing, but actually killing a lot of people in the process.
You know, with your just before we end, you know, the Mental Wellness Committee, what kind of people should be in that committee? Like, what should they represent in an organization?
Yeah, so typically we would want to sponsor from a business leader's perspective. So if the CEO can be on board, that would be the best. Unfortunately, they tend to be some of the busiest. But with the current client that we're working with that is doing probably the highest level of best practice, the CEO is on board.
Right.
He is absolutely on board because of a lot of painful incidents that have happened in the past.
Right.
So sometimes pain gives birth to a lot of wonderful things in an organization. And so the CEO is definitely on board.
Right.
We also have HR. We have pretty much as many business leaders involved as well. We have experts, academic researchers in universities to also be involved, because we want them to take part in an evidence-based approach, give us the evidence, conduct the research, and produce journal articles or produce reports. And we also have people like, say, for example, myself, who are organizational psychologists. And we also have people from analytics team, so people who are really, really good at analytics. But we're really finding issues with analytics these days. It's very, very, very hard to make sure that we get the right data and to really use it in a confidential manner, because unfortunately data is being used in a very unethical manner sometimes.
Right.
That loses the trust and credibility. And once you have that as an issue, forget about trying to get any truth in an organization as well.
But
so I forgot to add, Frida, we also have, as very important part of the committee, we have something called the reaction arm. So the reaction arm consists of different target groups within the organization who react to anything and everything that we think about, talk about, and say about as a committee. immediately. So it's almost like a Facebook thing where we, when we talk, people like or don't like what we're saying immediately.
Right.
To give us feedback. So we have a reaction committee that gives us feedback about what will work and what will not work. Eventually, this feedback committee tend to become the champions and begin to slowly endorse it, but they follow the same format. Right. They then become a committee. They also have a reaction group, and then they have the next batch.
Right.
So it is literally a movement that we are trying to create without any imposition that the ones who are the best paid or the most well-researched are the ones who have the right answers. This is purely based on a reaction and what will create an organic movement. What will create that buy-in for the next round?
Right. And I think, you know, very a point you said earlier, nothing, I think to me, nothing spells commitment like the CEO being involved. You know, if he's involved or he or she's involved, it just says that this is something that we're serious about. Thank you, as always, for your time and talking about this, integrating mental health as a strategy in the workplace. Hetal Doshi from OSITE in the Butterfly Effect series. I'm Fiona Liu. You've been listening to Raise Your Game, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.